The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks. Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day! And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's what? Hangover Monday? Yeah, we can call it that. Hangover Monday here in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined as always by my esteemed colleague, the Professor Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, we'll have to go to the Shakespearean stage to break down all of the incredible plot twists from Super Bowl 46. I'm going to tell you why Rick Pitino went from having a big smile on his face Saturday to cursing dang it afterwards. And when we go to Monday's night moves, if you hear echoes of Bob Seger in the background waiting on the thunder, you might be waiting on the thunder a long time this particular night.
Dave, first take on a Monday. Obviously, Super Bowl took center stage this weekend. What did you see that you want to share with our viewing audience as your first take for today?
Well, just memories of really the past almost 2 years now on the professional sports scene. Two summers ago, you cannot have seen the San Francisco Giants coming as a World Series champion, and you certainly aren't seeing Edgar Renteria being the guy who's going to make the big hit. Last year, Green Bay, a wild card team, wins the Super Bowl. Do you have the Dallas Mavs futures around the All-Star break last year? No, you didn't. None of us did. NBA championship. And, of course, the Giants. The Giants who were sitting at 500, not that long ago. Tom Coughlin was going to be fired. It's been amazing, this run in professional sports over the past couple of years. Makes us wonder if are there certain changes? Is there more randomness in play now? And are we supposed to begin looking at futures? In fact, we even forgot one that should have been real prime, the St. Louis Cardinals in baseball this year. How could you have seen that one coming? So do we start to change our approach a little bit? Do we look for maybe these little sleeper elements because there's volatility in the marketplace? We just might. That's a big thing we'll be talking about in the days and weeks to come, and certainly focusing in on tomorrow when the Super Bowl 47 future book is a big part of the show. So out on Super Bowl Sunday at a party or home, what was the day like?
Well, the party's all about the party on Friday night, the Covers party. We have to talk about that one. Hundreds and hundreds of you were out there. We really appreciate all the support we got. And there were guys that watched the show every day and guys that had never seen the show in their lives. But the bottom line was fantastic turnout at the Super Bowl party. Thank all of you who showed up. And something to think about, not ready to announce yet, but things are in the planning stages for March Madness. So if you're thinking about a March Madness trip here to Las Vegas, well, I'll tell you what, you may want to plan on getting here maybe, the night before, something like that, because plans are in the works. Nothing to announce today, but the bottom line, plans are in the works for the next one. Really was a fun time. Even Dave got out and started talking to the masses a little bit. Good times. We're able to give away some swag, free food, free booze. Everyone was out of there by, 9:30, 10 o'clock to go on with their night. So I thought it was very, very successful. Thanks to Ash and Gruel for putting it all together from the Covers end. Thanks to all of you who showed up. And for those of you who didn't, hey, there's always next time.
Actually, as you were saying, people stayed around about 9 or 9:30. Mm-hmm. We sort of noticed that people leaving the party coincided with the time the dancers and the Pussycat Doll Casino, right, attached. The minute they took the stage, a little after 9 o'clock, our crowd started to thin just a little bit.
And can you blame them? Really, they were good to look at. Let's just put it that way. There's going to be a ton to review about this Super Bowl. Obviously, major plot twists. And that's going to be a little bit more time on the Shakespearean stage, as Mr. Malinsky likes to call it, when we get to postmortem. But for now, let's call it term paper time, how I spent my Super Bowl Sunday. And, some key thoughts here. We got to talk about the safety to open the game. It's a lead story on Deadspin right now. Some clown who put $1,000 on 50-1 that the first score of the game is going to be a safety at the MGM. And he made 50 grand, and now he's a hero, and he's tweeting out his ticket. Look what I did. You're a clown. It's a bad bet. You know, congratulations on winning it. I give you all the credit in the world for walking away with 50 dimes. Nice score. But, you know, you make that bet 51 times, guess what? You're going to be even. That's not likely to happen again. But, Dave, so much to discuss. We talk about Ahmad Bradshaw's inability to get himself down at the one-yard line. We talk about what might have happened had Rob Gronkowski been able to catch that Hail Mary pass in the end zone. What happens with the extra point in that play? So many nuances from this game, Dave. Where do you want to go?
I mean, it was compelling football. At no point in the proceedings did you really have an idea as to who was going to win. You never could tell that either team was better, but it wasn't good football. You know, it didn't look like a championship game, and it sort of harkens back to the conference championships 2 weeks ago that were a couple of close games decided as much by bounces of the ball as the quality of the teams. A lot of bounces in play yesterday. Think about the little bounces of the Giants recovering both of their own fumbles. Just happened to bounce the right way for them. As Teddy said, that opening safety. Yeah, great to have 50,000 in your pocket, but what a terrible bet at 50-1 odds. In the history of the NFL, we'd like to see how many times has any game had a safety be the first score. The odds of that, you're into the thousands to one. But maybe what would have been the most compelling, because I'm not sure how many people were thinking about it at the time, if that last Hail Mary pass is completed, not if New England scores the play before when there's time on the clock, if they score on the last Hail Mary pass with all zeros on the clock, it's their option to choose whether to kick the extra point or not. In the regular season, by NFL rules, that's mandatory because you have that tiebreaker differential come playoff time of total points. So you have to do it for yourself and also for the opposition or any teams that could ever be involved in a tiebreaker. In the playoffs, it's your option. So what would Bill Belichick decide to do? If you complete that pass and there's this big celebration and all the players go into the end zone, do you say, oh, no, let's interrupt the celebration. Everyone back to the sidelines. We're going to kick the extra point. Do you let it still happen? Well, think about this. I mean, literally, worldwide, tens of billions of dollars could have changed place. If
billions? With a B?
Billions with a B.
Tens of billions?
Globally? I would think so. Certainly billions, but, well, no, actually, if you talk about what the swing would have been.
Sure.
It's
an enormous swing. No,
because let's say if there was 10 billion bet worldwide, it's almost all in play if they decide to kick. Because if people weren't following or knowing what we're talking about, the game could have landed on 3, which was that pivotal number, a number that would have had some books out here crying a little bit. But what would Belichick have done?
I don't think you can possibly kick the extra point there. I think that you have to either take a knee, because if you kick the extra point gets blocked and they run it back. That's
you can't run it back. In the NFL, you can't run it back. That's only the college.
Oh, well, yeah, then in that case, I don't know what he would have done. Probably nothing. I don't think that they would have gone out there to kick the extra point. But, you know, Gronkowski was close on that tip in the end zone. Could have been the wildest finish in Super Bowl history. Would have eclipsed the Kevin Dyson last play and, you know, the Adam Vinatieri field goals and all of that. But maybe the key to this game, Dave, when we talk about it and look back on it, were the momentum swings. You know, there's always a prop here in Vegas. Will either team score 3 straight times? And the yes is always a nice, you have to lay a fair bit of juice with that price. And it hadn't been cashing in recent Super Bowls. Only 3 of the last 8 Super Bowls did that particular prop wager cash. Will either team score 3 straight times? In this year's Super Bowl, both teams scored 3 straight times. The Patriots, of course, in the second quarter, putting up the field goal and then the 2 touchdowns, one to close out the second, one to start the third, which was essentially their only 2 good drives of the ballgame, those 2 TD drives. And then the Giants, of course, with the 2 field goals and then the game winner by Bradshaw. So kind of the unique circumstances with significant momentum swings on both sides, which is always a good thing for those of you who are doing the in-game wagering. Gave you opportunities to take both teams at a very attractive price.
Yeah, somebody who was in the right place at the right time on the in running yesterday could have done awfully, awfully well if you were convinced to pull that trigger. Now, here would have been the problem. When the Giants take the big lead early and they're moving the football well into the middle of the second quarter, do you see something that gets you to the Patriots? That's tough. The value's there, but do you think, oh, no, wait, New England can turn this around? And, boy, if you watched those Patriot drives to close the first half and to begin the second half, those of you with Giant tickets in your pocket, And we were one of them. We're thinking, Brady has found a rhythm here. He's found something the Giants can't defend. When it goes to 17-9, yeah, in running, you could take a nice Giant price. It's hard to take it at that point. That New England momentum looks so clean. They're thinking, how can they turn this back around? So it was there, but you had to be bold enough to pull the trigger.
Speaking of bold, those of you who are bold have been sending in great emails. We're getting questions on a daily basis, and please keep those emails coming. We answer as many as we can right here on air. The address, of course, sportsday@covers.com. You can follow us in the posting forums, or you can follow us on Twitter as well, @VegasSportsDay, and you can get involved in the posting forum. There are active threads and discussions going right now, including a daily thread about this show, covers.com/posting forum.
Up next, we're going to go back to Indianapolis for the two single most important plays of Super Bowl 46. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
Hey, I'm Al Mann. Is that how you get them to do that all the time? Just sit there and be an ass. Is that it? Hey, I'm Al. Hey, I'm Al Mancini at Top of the Food Chain. You are watching the Vegas Video Network. We got big forks, big spoons. I got a big mouth. I got no guests.
Okay, guys, let's scrub up. Let's get those surgical gowns on. We're going to head into the postmortem, where we take you deep inside the game to show you things you should have seen, but probably didn't. You almost had to be expecting us to go back to Shakespeare today. We use this so often to point out these little bounces of the ball in the course of sporting events that cause huge, huge swings to take place. And one of the things that Shakespeare did so very well is breaking down these big historical sweeping events to where, no, it's just one individual making a decision at one point in time. The recognition of greatness later, sometimes it's actually something fluky and trivial at the very time, but that's why we do have to break these things down. We don't want to attach too much weight to the winners, and sometimes we don't want to punish the losers too badly. So the key, when the play's the thing, is to isolate that particular moment where a variety of outcomes could have happened and show you why one particular one is the outcome that goes into the books.
On Friday, we noted in Money Time that the Kansas-Missouri game had the chance to be something really special, the last time the border war was going to be played in Columbia for an indefinite period of time. And when we get to Money Time later today, we're going to talk about that crowd in Columbia, Missouri this past weekend. But for as passionate as the crowd had been throughout the ballgame, they were almost ready for an early trip to the exits. Tyshawn Taylor scored on a dunk, made it 71-63 Kansas, an eight-point lead for the road team with just 3.5 minutes remaining. When Marcus Denman missed a three-pointer on the next possession, Missouri's chances of winning very, very remote at that stage. But if you didn't see the game, you probably noticed the headlines the next day. Denman scored 9 points in a span of 1:08, the kind of burst that makes the highlight reel, something that Reggie Miller fans still talk about to this day, and the final scoreboard etched forever, 74-71 Tigers. But while Denman's offensive burst makes the highlight reels, the plays that did not get shown perhaps tell us the real story.
You notice in the photo we don't show Denman shooting. Instead, we show Missouri playing defense. That's what that endgame was all about. The final 3:24 of the game, Kansas doesn't score. But not only did they not score, from one particular stretch, 2:26, down to the 10-second mark, they only got one shot at the basket. Taylor got fouled, had two free throw attempts. Four of their five possessions, they couldn't even get a shot off. That was all about the grit and determination of those Missouri seniors on defense, stepping it up and reaching back for something special when they had to. That's something we talked about with this particular team. It's the chemistry, but also the fact that they play with a lot of passion. What you like about teams that play with passion is when a game's on the line defensively, they can step up. We talk about these things a lot because most people don't. You can't turn SportsCenter on and watch highlights of Missouri stealing the ball from Kansas or of Kansas turning the ball over, Tyshawn Taylor being called for an offensive foul. Those don't make the highlight reels. The shots that get made do. But sometimes if we could find those teams that play with that defensive grit, we can make an awful lot of money out of them over the course of the NCAA season. And then we turn to Sunday. And what a day we had. Not the greatest football game we'd ever seen, but one of the most compelling because there were so many plot twists in there. So Teddy and I made this agreement yesterday. Let's each pick the most important play over the course of this game and talk about what could have been as opposed to what was.
So it's 17-15, Patriots with the lead, late in the fourth quarter, New England driving, 2nd and 11 on the Giants 44. There's 4 minutes and 6 seconds left. Tom Brady drops back to pass. He has Welker open in the seam, but the two of them misconnect. Brady's throw just slightly behind Welker. Welker, a catch that he makes, so I don't know, 99 times out of 100, just lets the ball slip through his fingers, as you see, obviously, on the accompanying photo behind us, and the ball falls harmlessly to the turf. 3rd down and 11, Pats throw an incomplete. 4th down, they're forced to punt. The rest, of course, is history. Eli leads the Giants on the game-winning drive, and Tom Brady goes down as a 2-time Super Bowl loser instead of a 4-time Super Bowl winner. Now, the obvious is that New England probably would have scored had Welker caught that pass. What's not so obvious is, when, number one, would they have gotten a touchdown? If they get a touchdown there, they're up 9, and it's ball game over unless the Giants can recover an onside kick. Let's not forget that the Giants were down to a single timeout. Remember Eli Manning burning the 2 timeouts to avoid delay of game penalties on the offensive side on previous drives in that fourth quarter? So had that gone for a 1st down, had Welker been able to come down with that football, you know, we're talking about no more than 3:15 on the clock for the next snap. The Giants with just the 1 timeout and the 2-minute warning to stop the clock, and New England with the potential to punch in a touchdown that the Giants would not have been able to recover from. Even the field goal in that spot would have forced the Giants to give a 2-minute drive, score a touchdown, and do it without any timeouts. So the Pats missed that opportunity. Some of the drops on their final drive probably getting more headlines than Welker's drop, but in my mind, no play in the game more important than Wes Welker being unable to come down with that pass, a pass that would have almost clinched it for New England with the clock winding down.
Why were the Patriots still that close? There was a moment in the second quarter where the Giants were ready to snap the game open, and a little bit of a fluke kept them from doing it. New York up 9-3. 3rd down and 1 at the Patriot 46-yard line, 4 minutes and 40 seconds left in the half. They hand the ball to Brandon Jacobs, plows for a 10-yard run to the 36. It's going to be 1st down Giants. Most likely the last possession of the half now, because the clock was going to tick to about 4 minutes before there was another snap. 12-3 at halftime, maybe 16-3 at halftime, and in full control of the game at that particular point. But it came back. There was a holding penalty called on Kevin Booth against Vince Wilfork. Problem is, on replay they showed there was no holding. We can understand why the officials made the call. Wilfork lost his balance, Booth had a good leverage position, and Wilfork spins and goes down. When an official sees a big defensive lineman get turned and go down like that, you instinctively throw the flag every time. Usually that's the only way a guy that weighs about 350 gets taken down. Didn't happen this time. In fact, it was funny, after the game, Booth in his post-game press conference said that Wilfork actually winked at him when they came back to the line of scrimmage for the next play. A bit of a good acting job. But think about how much different this game would have been. What happened immediately after that penalty? Well, the Giants don't convert on 3rd down, and they don't get the ball again for over an hour. An hour and 1 minute of actual clock time before they touch the football again offensively. New England takes it down the field for a long touchdown drive to end the second half, or first half. They open the third quarter with another long drive. Look at that dramatic swing. Instead of the Giants scoring to be up 12-3 or 16-3, the next time they get the ball, they're down 17-9. That might have been a 17-21 point swing play that in reality was the hold that wasn't.
Well, enough with the Super Bowl talk. It's time to shift our focus to the hardwoods. Money time coming. coming up next.
Oh, hello there. My name is Brandon Gooch Hahn, host of Awkward Silence 2.1. And when I'm not living vicariously through Chris Phillips, I'm on VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Okay, guys, let's raise the roof. It's money time. This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. Let's start tonight in Philadelphia, where the Sixers are 4-point home favorites against the LA Lakers. And this is the 76ers squad. Some impressive stuff happened over the course of the week. Number one is that they've gotten healthier, finally. Spencer Hawes back in the lineup this past weekend. 14 points, 5 boards, and 31 minutes of playing time against Atlanta. Nikola Vujovic back in the lineup as well. He scored 15 points with 3 boards in more than 20 minutes of time against those Hawks. And the way Philly responded to their miserable fourth quarter against Miami on Friday night, coming back the next night, and not just winning big against a Hawks team that had kind of played every bit as poorly as Philly did the previous game. Impressive result, in my mind, for the Sixers.
Yeah, when you see that depth that Philadelphia now has again, we think that might be the key factor heading into tonight's game. The Lakers on the road this year, 3-7 straight up, 2-8 against the spread. There's a prime reason for these road failures. It's that Laker bench. The depth isn't there to get it done. Let's take a look at just how bad that Laker bench core has been so far. In their road games, Laker bench only producing 18.9, allowing 33.2. That's a negative of minus 14.3 points a game. Note that that's including some games earlier this year when they had Steve Blake on the court. Without Blake, the bench has been a disaster, completely outclassed against Utah in a game they were blown out of. Note that 14-0 Utah run in the fourth quarter. Yeah, a lot of that starter against starter. The reason for that, the starter is having to log too many minutes. Particular problem, too, without Blake, your backup point guard. Even when Blake's there, the point guard rotation among the worst in the NBA. Right now, Andrew Godelock, the guy they want to try to get something out of, it's not happening. The two games on this road trip, he's played 38 minutes and 40 seconds, and he's only had one assist, leads Mike Brown to make this comment about him. It's hard sometimes watching a rookie run your offense, but it's something we have to deal with. Those turnovers could be an even bigger factor tonight. The floor game might take center stage.
Oh, no question. I mean, you know, look at the Lakers. You know, we're talking about 3-7 straight up, 2-8 against the spread on the highway this year. One of the wins coming in overtime. And look at the matchup in terms of the turnovers tonight. Philly, number one in the NBA in turnover differential, plus 3.9 per game. The Lakers, dead last in the NBA in turnover potential. Not only is their defense not forcing any, their offense committing too many. The Lakers, minus 2.8 turnovers per game. That's a matchup that could well work in the 76ers' favor this evening.
Let's go to Portland, where Oklahoma City is a 1.5-point favorite over the host Trailblazers. And to be favored on this court, you better be awfully, awfully good. Portland so far this year, 11-1 straight up at home. But go beyond the 11-1 and note that they're outscoring the opposition by 16.6 points per game. They're not just beating people on this court, they're blowing people out. So how does Oklahoma City get to be the favorite? Well, they bring the NBA's best winning percentage. Okay, that's pretty good. But are the Thunder all that right now? Might there be some cracks in their armor?
Well, earlier in the season, we did a couple of takes about Russell Westbrook. I remember doing a postmortem about him about a month ago where we were talking about the rough start that Westbrook was off to, some of the issues that he was having distributing the ball for OKC. You know, Westbrook's been able to get his game back on track, but there's still a major weakness for the Thunder that's not necessarily reflected in this point spread or among the betting markets in general. That weakness, of course, and let's see that graphic now, Jacob. We're talking about the Thunder ball management. Turnovers per game, Oklahoma City ranks number 29 in the NBA. That's an indictment of Russell Westbrook. Their assist-to-turnover ratio, number 29 in the NBA. Their turnover margin, number 29 in the NBA. Only the Knicks have more turnovers. Only the Kings have a worse assist-to-turnover ratio. And only the Lakers have a worse turnover margin. Those are not good stats for Oklahoma City. Now, they've been able to overcome the turnover weaknesses that they've had, in large part due to the fact that they've got the best player in basketball, or one of the best players in basketball, whatever you want to call it, Kevin Durant. The guy can win games by himself. We've seen him do it on more than a handful of occasions already this season. But Durant, well, he's had some issues against the likes of Gerald Wallace. Wallace, a premier defender, he matches up well against KD, and he held him to 19 points on 8 of 26 shooting. 3 turnovers, only 2 assists. When the Blazers went to OKC and won straight up by 10 less than a month ago.
That may not be the last time we talk about that game on tonight's show, but before going back to Portland, it's Big Monday on the NCAA Hardwoods. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Let's go to Louisville, Kentucky, where tonight Rick Pitino's Cardinals are going to take on the Jim Calhoun-less UConn Huskies. Louisville, about a 4-point home favorite in this game, and this is a UConn team. They've gotten a couple of breaks over the last couple of ball games. They got no Herb Pope for Seton Hall on Saturday, made for an easy route for the Huskies in that ball game, with Seton Hall missing their best low post player. And Dave, they may well get another break in the injury department tonight when it comes to Louisville not being quite as healthy as Rick Pitino hoped they would.
Yeah, going into Saturday, Rick Pitino, one of the happiest guys in all of college basketball, because a team that had been injury-riddled all season was finally getting everybody healthy, had a full week of practice, everyone back in the rotation. Let's take a look at what Pitino had to say before that game against Rutgers, because you could see why they were a prime play-on team, and some of us had Louisville in our pockets on Saturday. Said, almost every guy on our team has missed a lengthy period of time. We're like in the beginning of January from a fatigue standpoint. We have fresh legs and fresh minds. You would think it's the first week of practice with these guys because of how much fun they are having. And then they stopped having fun, or at least Georgie Deng stopped having fun. He sprained his ankle against Rutgers, left the game for a while. When the game tightened up in the second half, he went back out on the court, played a few minutes, didn't play well, but his presence matters for Louisville. First, the Deng numbers. He started on the team in minutes. 10.2 points a game, 9.5 rebounds, 81 block shots. Those are awfully good numbers because Louisville wants to press. If you're going to press, you need a shot blocker back there underneath the basket. Now they may not have one. Deng's ankle, it swells up after the game. He did not practice yesterday. We would actually consider him doubtful for tonight right now. That's a big hole for them to have to replace.
Yeah, I mean, UConn's got a hole to replace, too, in terms of Calhoun. I don't even know when he's going to be back. It looks like he's going to have to undergo major surgery. This is not a minor issue for Jim Calhoun. It could be after the season ends. He could come back for the next game. He could be out indefinitely. We may have seen the last of Jim Calhoun coaching the UConn Huskies. Do not know yet. George Blaney is going to take over again on the bench. But, you know, it's a UConn team. Well, number one, you know, they can take advantage if Louisville is unable to get Deng in the lineup tonight. The freshman big man, Stanley Drummond, 10.2 points per game, 7.7 boards, 2.7 blocks. He's certainly a defensive low post force whose offense continues to get better. Ryan Boatwright starting to get in a rhythm for the Huskies. He scored 19 points, had 5 assists and 4 steals against Seton Hall over the weekend, and their senior point guard, Jordan Theodore. But for UConn, the biggest issues right now, besides their inability to win on the road, man, their shooters just aren't scoring. You look at Shabazz Napier, 1-for-22 from the floor over the last three games, 7-of-38 over the last floor. Is this a slump, or is this a guy who's just lost it, a ticking time bomb? He's been taken out of the starting lineup. I don't know if you can give minutes or major minutes to a guy shooting that poorly. Jeremy Lamb, you know, I mean, the duo of Napier and Lamb combined, 4-of-16 against Seton Hall, 4-of-23 against Georgetown, shooting like that, not going to win a road game in a very hostile environment.
Let's go to Norman, Oklahoma, where Missouri, off that scintillating win over Kansas on Saturday night, a 5-point favorite over the host Sooners. Second time around for these two teams. Missouri dominates the first, but we got to go inside that box score a little bit because it's a domination maybe a little different than what you would have expected. They went 87-49 at home in Columbia. They were laying 12.5-13 in that game. So when you see that big a blowout, you figure, okay, it's the Missouri press. They're forcing Oklahoma to turn the ball over. They demoralize them that way. No, Oklahoma actually only had 8 turnovers the whole game. They handled the Missouri press well. What they couldn't do, they just couldn't defend Missouri. Missouri shoots 59.3% in the game, 14 layups or dunks, points in the paint, 36-10. They just simply could not guard that quickness. But now here comes the big question. Of all the emotion that was in play Saturday night, are these Missouri players perhaps a half step slow this time around?
It wouldn't shock me at all if they are, Dave. I mean, this is a classic letdown spot. It's a team that they blew out earlier in the year. Now they have to go on the road coming off a very emotional win. Not much time when it comes to recuperating between Saturday's explosive finish and this big Monday ESPN game. And from a spot perspective, you know, it's a real iffy one for the road favorite in this one. That's why we've seen all the money come on the home dog so far this morning right here in Las Vegas. But let's show that quote from a head coach, Frank Haith. Basically, he says, "The crowd was as loud as I've ever been in, and I've been in some loud places. I think that we don't win this game without their energy and what they brought to the table tonight." So clearly, the crowd had a big influence in their ability, the Missouri's ability, both to keep the game close against Kansas and then to steal it at the end. Matching that same level of momentum tonight with a very hostile environment, not going to be quite so easy. Now, Heath did take the team to a local hotel after the games. They weren't partying on campus, and that should improve their focus somewhat from what it might have been. But I don't know. This team may be more than a little distracted when they take the floor this evening.
Problem we have is that this letdown aspect is something very open to the markets. People see it. A game that would have been 6, 6.5. Now you're taking the worst of it if you try to put that factor in play. And can Oklahoma make it work? We talked about their inability to defend Missouri the first time around. They allowed 12 out of 21 from three-point range. Oklahoma just lost to Iowa State Saturday. They allowed 15 for 30 from three-point range. That's the problem. If you can't guard people on the perimeter, if you don't have that quickness, it's a very difficult matchup. So we can see the situation. There's this letdown element. You might want to play against Missouri here. But is Oklahoma, at this price point, offer you enough to challenge them with? I'm not sure. We're going to need someone to play Missouri up to 6 for our pockets to take a look. But instead of that one, there is somewhere we can go to make money tonight. I believe we're heading back to the Pacific Northwest again.
Yeah, I mean, the Blazers have been very, very good money makers for us on this show, and tonight looks like another prime opportunity. Again, you look back to the first meeting between these two teams, and Oklahoma City's got no edge in that ballgame. The shooting percentages are pretty well even. Portland shot well from the free throw line, but they drew fouls against Oklahoma City on a consistent basis. They were able to win the battle of the boards, and they were able to harass Kevin Durant all night long. I don't see why that changes tonight in a venue that has been a money-making machine for anyone who's been betting on Portland at the Rose Garden so far this season. How about 10-1-1 against the number? I'm willing to take the Blazers as the play of the day, plus 1.5. That's our Vegas Sports Day play of the day. We'll look for that Blazers ATS run to go to 11-1-1 at home following tonight's contest. Portland plus the points is the play of the day. That's going to wrap it up for our Monday edition. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. From Merlinski, I'm Savransky. Enjoy the games. Good luck. We'll see you again. Bye.